This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, bootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You gotta let me fly, Captain.
So remember, don't go chasing waterfalls. Stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to. Ladies and gentlemen, that might be Michael Keaton's best work. The other guys.
He's dying. He's actually dying.
That might be Will Ferrell's best work. That might be Mac Wahlberg's best work.
What do you even do here, Bob?
That might be. It definitely is Eva Mendez's best work.
I knew you were going to go there. Yeah.
Where else would I go? Ladies, gentlemen, boys, girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Rob Brown Show on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Let's address it.
I forgot to mention it was The Rock's best acting work.
It was The Rock's best acting work. I could not agree with that take more. Samuel L. Jackson was beyond excellent in that movie as well. Hey, you know what? Spoiler alert if you haven't seen The Other Guys. I don't even, as long as that movie's been out and as much as it is on you for not having seen it yet, if you haven't seen it yet, The Rock and Samuel L. Jackson have a plot twist rivaled only by, who was it, Drew Barrymore in Scream back in the day?
You talk about how long they're in the movie?
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that movie's been out for what, 15 years, maybe longer than that?
So I got this shirt for $6 on Amazon.
Good for you. It's an awesome shirt. Yeah, it really it is. There are some people who are not watching the stream and don't know what the shirt is, though.
Well, they should come to the stream at facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, The Fan Upstate on Twitter, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Found a Amazon seller and busted out the Dale Earnhardt 3. We had had a Dale conversation on the show yesterday. Had found this shirt like 3 days ago, and
So you took the risk after being burned on the poster thing and everything. You're just like, I'm still going to buy online, and you went for it and you got the shirt.
I'm going to say 87-ish% of my shopping is done online at this point. If I can avoid mall stores, groceries, etc.
Well, it's paparazzi. I get it. I understand.
No, you know what it is? I'm tired of being asked, "Can I see your receipt?" I'm just tired. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. I'm not coming to your store anymore. Because no, you can't see my receipt. I already bought it. I already paid for it. It's mine. No, you may not see my receipt.
Have you tried going to a different, the same store, but in a different location?
Yes. Yes.
And they did it to you again?
To the point that.
Wow.
To the point that. My wife is in on the conspiracy theory that I apparently, whatever a shoplifter looks like, that's just me. My wife's in on it now because...
Are you wearing the glasses when you're going in there?
I've done it with, I've done it without, I've done it with that.
You look a little shady today with the glasses. So, if someone walks in with those glasses, you got to think, okay, this guy's too coordinated. Something's going on.
No. I've gone hat, no hat, glasses, no glasses, jacket, no jacket. I've done it all. And we're at the point now, that... The wife's in on the theory because we've gone to that same mega store a number of times
Because it's right by the house, right? Like, it's the easiest place to go that we know for a fact that they have everything we need. Okay? I'm just going to put it that way. And consistently, if we go, consistently, there are two people that work there. And consistently, if there are 77 people in the self-checkout, I'm the one that they'll go, can I see your receipt, please? And there are times that I get it, right? Like, I went in there, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago. And I bought my Xbox, right? Got myself a new Xbox. What are we on? The Series S, X, whatever it is. Got myself a new Xbox. That's like a $500 purchase. So, like, I get that if somebody's rolling up out of there with a box that's worth $500, you want to make sure they got it. And I was not offended by that one. Later the same day, the wife's like, hey, we got to run up to the megastore. Got to grab some stuff. I'm like, yep, no worries. I'll go with you. So we get in the car. We drive up there. We grab, like, four things, like gallon of milk, couple of instant rice packets, because we were going to make some red beans and rice that Monday night. Just get some stuff. And as we're like, one bag of stuff. I'm not pushing a shopping cart out of there. One bag, like I'm carrying it. We didn't even bring a bag, like didn't even bring a basket into the store because we knew whatever we needed, I could carry from the shelf to the register, throw it all in one bag, carry it from the register to the car. We had a bag of stuff. There are like four people that all leave the self-checkout register at the same time. One guy has a big-ass basket full of stuff. And as we're walking by, the lady's like, may I see your receipt? And I look at the wife, and I'm like, there's no damn way she's talking to me. There's just no way she's talking to me. And sure enough, I turn around. I wish I could make this up. She steps around the guy that has the full basket full of stuff, steps around that guy to come to me to see my receipt for like four items, all that fit into one bag. And had I been solo, I think that would have been the one time that I'd have been like, no, you may not. You may not. I've already bought it. I've already paid for it. Everything in this bag belongs to me. You may not go rifling through my stuff as it is my stuff officially and confirmed. No, you may not. But I'm not going to do that to my wife. That's not the moment to take the stand on principle. Right?
I did it again, by the way. That's three on me.
Oh, you're getting smoked this week.
It's all right. It's all right. I'm kind of having a chill week. Is it possible that people who do that, stand at the front door and check receipts, have to check a certain amount of receipts?
It is,
and if it's possible, if you had a quota, you had to check a certain amount, would you not pick the person with the least amount of items? Because if you got four items, boom, it's easy to check the receipt. Whereas a guy with a cart full, you're going to be standing there for a while. You're probably going to miss some stuff.
I would like to think that even if there is a quota, I would like to think that if you're in that position, if you're in that role, the role of receipt checker to make sure nobody's walking out with their stuff after doing the self-checkout, which I know is a thing that happens. That people, you know, they pay for four or five items, and then maybe they jam a little something down in the bottom of the bag and then cover it up with other stuff, right? Like, I get it. If you're going to do that, if you're trying to hit a number, and this is the honest working theory that I have, as aggressive as I can come across on the show sometimes, I think, a genuinely friendly person. Like, I really am a friendly person. I challenge you to find any listener out there who has ever come up to me at any event I've been at and said hello that hasn't at least, or wouldn't at least describe me as cordial, right? I think I'm a friendly guy. I have a smile on my face most of the time. I like being alive. I like being out amongst the people. Like, I'm a friendly guy. And I think you can read that on my face most of the time. I've chalked it up to, if your job is to stop people who believe that they are done with their shopping experience, I have gotten my items, selected them, cataloged them, scanned them, paid for them, put them in a bag, and I am now leaving the store. That is the end of my shopping experience. I am on to whatever is next in my life. Those people don't want to be stopped. They don't. None of us want to be stopped. Like, we're ready to move on to the next part of our day. I am done with this.
And are there multiple exits in this place?
I think what happens is that the receipt checker, who's got to look at the however many people are coming through this self-checkout register any given hour, any given day, any given whatever. I think when you know that you are confronting people who believe they are done with this experience and are ready to go, that your goal would be to stop the people who look like they would be the least mad about being stopped. You want to stop the people who look like they are the least likely to go, absolutely not, Ethel. I got to go. Absolutely not. You can't. I've already paid. This is my stuff now. And I just don't come across as big as I am. I don't come across as I don't come across as a confrontational guy. I don't look like a guy who's going to be like, no, man, absolutely not. Bleep off. I'm ready to roll. Absolutely not. So I think I'm getting stopped because I'm a big cuddly teddy bear. I'm a big giant walking friend to everybody. And I think they stop me over and over because of the number of because of the complete lack of confrontation on my big handsome face. That's why I think I get stopped over and over. So I think, and I'm going to have to like stuff the emotions down deep. I think it's going to take one time genuinely being a jerk to somebody. And I don't like that. That's not me. That's not my style. I'm a non-confrontational guy. Never been in a fist fight in my life. I talked my way out of them. I don't like confrontation. I think it's going to take one time when somebody goes, can I check your receipt, please? To go, no, no, and do not ask me again. I've paid for this stuff. It's my stuff. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. I'm done with this. I have shopped. I have purchased. I'm going to my car. Call the cops if you got to, right? I think it's going to take one time to like genuinely be, hey, you good over there? Bless you, buddy. That one felt like it was from the soul. Okay, perfect. I think it's going to take one good time of just being a b-hole, just being an absolute jerk to somebody to stop having this happen. Because even the wife at this point, when we go, and I'm all, not her, they come to me every time we go. She's at the point now where she's like, I think I'm just going to carry the groceries. And I'm like, do you understand how much worse it's going to look if I walk in this store, I'm in this store for like 15, 20, 30 minutes, and then I walk out carrying nothing at all? They're 100% going to call the cops on me for that. It's 1,000% chance they're going to be like, nah, he did not just roll up in here for 25 minutes and has nothing on him. Like, I've got to carry the bags so that I definitely don't get the cops called on me for that. But I'm at the point now where I think I'm going to have to like stuff the politeness down. I'm going to have to prepare myself for the hours of emotional turmoil that it is going to bring out of me to be an absolute jerk and to just be mean one time. Because I think if I'm just mean one time, I think that can I see your receipt stops. Just one time. It's a working theory, though. There are, by the way, Lonzo, multiple exits to answer your question. The problem is there's one of those people on both ends, and I get it both sides. It doesn't matter which exit I leave on, because you got the groceries on one side and you got everything else on the other side. And it doesn't matter which side I go every time. And it's the same two people. And it doesn't matter if I go in 3 in the afternoon or 3 in the morning. It's the same two people working the doors every time.
Do they have a garden center?
I don't want to give too much away.
Okay,
about this particular establishment.
A lot of those places also have a garden center with a cashier.
Yeah, but if I okay,
and
so
and
but,
here's the thing: there's never a checker at the garden center.
The problem is, the groceries are on one side, and that's all the way on the other side. And how much worse does it look if I'm like, let me get all my groceries over here, let me clear the entire place to go all the way to the other side, and then try to take my milk and cookies through the ferns? Like, clearly, why is he going all the way over there? Like, there's no way to avoid it that doesn't make me look more suspicious. There's no way to avoid it that doesn't make it look like, oh, that dude's definitely up to something.
Sure there is. Here you go. Park on the side where the ferns are. Come through the door where the ferns are. So you're going back to where you parked.
So you're asking me to walk in that side,
yeah,
come inside,
yeah,
walk all the way to the other side, then collect my stuff, walk all the way back to the other side and check out. If there's one dude up there with a security camera, they're gonna be like, why?
No,
why?
I've did that kind of security before. I don't think that's necessarily a red flag.
I don't think I am a red flag, but I get checked every time.
As someone who
I'm already on a list, clearly
back in the day had security follow him from store to store in a mall. You definitely don't look as shady as I do. So, although I guess it's lessened as I've gotten older. I've given you options, and I think that would absolutely work. Just doing that.
I think your options all make me look more suspicious than however suspicious I already look. That has resulted in me getting receipt checked every time I go in the store. Every time.
You know, there are people who realize that they want to use a real a cashier instead of having to do self-checkout, and those garden
center. Dude, I still get checked?
No, what I'm saying is garden center, a lot of people do that so they can get through the line really quick because the lines are not really that big there.
You're missing my point.
You don't look suspicious if you do that. You just look like you're trying to dodge the line.
You're missing my point. I am clearly on some sort of list at this store. I'm getting it every time. So if I come in the door closest to my stuff, because I go in there for groceries 90% of the time. The door, the groceries, the checkout, the door. And even if I go through the regular checkout where somebody else does the beep, 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 and I pay, I still get hit by a receipt check on the way out. So I'm clearly on some sort of list at this establishment.
I'm willing to help you. Listen, I speak grandma, so I could come in and I could help you out and speak to the grandmas who have you on the list.
Dude, I could get you off the list. Old ladies love me.
Not at this place.
Old ladies love me. I have made it like a whole ass aspect of my personality that old ladies love me because I'm a sweetheart. I'm a big teddy bear. They love me, except this one lady. I don't know what I did, but I can go through the regular checkout, the self checkout, the far checkout, the near checkout. It doesn't matter. She just like, at this point, I'm convinced. Maybe I'm the only one that sees her and she's a ghost because she, no matter which door I come in and go out, she's always there. I don't believe in ghosts except for this one lady.
Hey, bro, maybe she's into you.
Just wait, be like, sup, boy? Can I, let me see that receipt. Let me see that receipt, young man. Yes, ma'am. All right, that's weird, and I don't like it anymore. Let's go to something else. We have got a show lined up for you today, ladies and gentlemen. A lot to get to. There was a conversation that took place about a week ago that we kind of danced around a little bit. We didn't really dive wholesale into it. And that is a number of proposals and conversations taking place right now in the landscape of collegiate football to try to curb the number of teams that fake injuries in order to manipulate the clock. There are some potential rules changes on the horizon to try to combat that. We'll talk about that. Bryce Young talked a little bit in an interview not too long ago about what he perceives as his growth from his pre- and post-benching during the 2026 season. We're going to get into that here in just a little while.
Growth.
It just never stops with you, does it? Just never stops. Got some hockey, got some NBA. Nikola Jokic, very good at basketball. Very good at basketball. 19 assists last night. More 15-plus assist game than any other non-guard in the history of basketball. Pretty good at basketball. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more all coming up. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. This is the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Yes, it is. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob, the great Milanzo, and you. 844-326-3663. 844-FANFONE. That's the number to call the show. That's the number to text the show. That's the number to be a part of the show. And we would certainly love for you to do just that. Jump on board. Be a part of it. Let's get into some conversations here. Dudes and dudettes. I haven't decided how much of a story this is or isn't, how much of a story this should or should not be. I honestly don't know how interested or not interested you guys are in this story. But the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour continue to work towards some sort of agreement, arrangement that would get those two tours, the two biggest golf tours on the planet, back in line with each other. What that looks like, what that means, the format of that, no idea. What we do know is that earlier this week, late last week, I guess I should say, what we do know is that late last week, Tiger Woods and a handful of other golfers, Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, and a number of LIV Tour officials all met with President Trump and each other at the White House. Trump came out a handful of hours after that and said that he does believe that there is a path to reconciling those two golfing organizations in order to get the world of golf back onto the same page. And I'm very intrigued by this. Obviously, Trump's a big golf guy. He's obviously got longstanding relationships with a number of athletes and officials in the golf world. Trump's golf resorts have been utilized as the site for both PGA Tour and LIV Tour events for many, many years. And so he obviously has a unique insight into a lot of what is going on in the world of golf. So frankly, I don't think he's a bad partner to have in this relationship. I don't think he is necessarily a bad partner to have as kind of a middleman. If for no other reason, then Donald Trump stands to make a lot of money if he can get these two tours in line. And I think we kind of know that's a driving force behind most of the decisions that he makes. And I'm not judging him because me too. I get it. So I think he provides a very unique element, a very unique perspective as somebody who is a fan of the sport, but also somebody who will profit if these two organizations were to get on the same page, were to come together and figure out what some sort of joint venture between the two ultimately turns out to look like. What I am genuinely interested in is twofold. Number one, how do the athletes on these two tours feel about this? And number two, how do the fans feel about this? And I do think that there's a split perspective within both of those groups. I think the guys on the LIV Tour, frankly, I think there's a little bit of buyer's remorse. Even though they did get a ton of money to make the jump, I think there's a little bit of buyer's remorse because let's keep it a buck. There's not really a big audience for that tour right now. There's not really, at least not really a television audience. So like, you get this huge swath of money from the Saudis for jumping over to the LIV Tour. But until you show up at Augusta, until you show up at the Masters, there's not really a ton of marketability behind it. I've got a friend of mine who's a big golf guy. He's down in Florida. He was a fraternity brother of mine. He's a big golf guy, and he is an advocate for the LIV Tour. And there's a group text of about five of my old fraternity brothers, all of us golf bros. We talk about betting golf. We talk about the events that are upcoming, etc. And I pointed out to him a couple of days ago when we were having a similar conversation about all of this that very rarely does he bring up the LIV Tour in our conversations. And I said, I'm going to keep it a buck with you. You advocate for the LIV Tour. You talk to us about how we should watch the LIV Tour, how we should be involved with the LIV Tour, how we should support the LIV Tour. Even if we don't love the foundation of the LIV Tour, you have made the argument over and over that, like in everything else, in an ideal world, competition breeds excellence. And that if the LIV Tour was supported, was advocated for, was given a bigger platform in the United States, the LIV Tour could be a force that drives golf forward. To which I responded, when's the next tournament? Where's the next tournament? How do I watch the next tournament? Let's say I believe this argument in its entirety. Let's say I was all in. I said, you know what? You're right. I like the three-day tournament. I like the shotgun start. And I actually kind of do like the shotgun start. I think that is something the PGA Tour should adopt. I think we should not start golf tournaments. I went to the U.S. Open last year up in North Carolina. I went up there last year. And when they started with one group going out on one and one group going out on 10, and, you know, every 9 minutes, the next guys went out. I got to tell you, the first, like, hour of that day, despite being at a major tournament, despite being at one of the most famous golf courses on planet Earth, despite walking the course alongside guys that I have grown up watching, guys that are the next generation, guys that I've seen on TV, the first couple of hours of that day were kind of boring because it's like there's huge crowds of people around because there's only, you know, for the first 10 minutes, there's only four guys on the course or eight guys on the course or whatever it is. And then 20 minutes later, now there's four guys on the course or eight guys on the course. And then a couple hours later, now there's 12 guys on the course. And that first hour or so, it's kind of boring. I do think they should go shotgun start. I think they should have a twofer on all 18, and we should be adding guys to the mix and just rolling through. It does get a little bit stale sometimes. But I still think the four-day tournament's where it's at. I still think that I don't need all the gimmicks. And I'm a gimmick guy. There are aspects of the LIV Tour that I think are good. I think turning the LIV Tour away from the actual golf, turning the LIV Tour into a party environment is good. Golf is fun. When did golf hit its peak? When Tiger Woods was making golf fun. When the Tiger Woods video game franchise was one of the two biggest video game franchises in the world. When they said, we got to embrace this youth movement. When they said, we got to lean into this youth movement. And they did that. And golf hit its peak. I think there are elements of the LIV Tour that are very good. But I also think at the end of the day, much like we're going to hear from a couple of basketball players later in the show, I think that there are some times when it is beneficial for a sport to look at itself and go, maybe we just be what we are. Maybe we just be golf. Maybe we just be basketball. Maybe we just be football. Maybe we just be what we are. And I do think at the end of the day, golf, maybe even more than those other sports, would benefit from just being golf. Just let the best golfers in the world go play golf. But I think they got to go play golf with and against each other. I think that's the one thing. The PGA Tour feels watered down. The LIV Tour, forget all of the politics behind it. Forget the Saudis. Forget the blood money. Forget the buying of golfers away from the PGA Tour. Forget all that. Just from the perspective of golf, I think the LIV Tour leans so far away from the inherent spirit of the game, yet has some really, really interesting aspects that could jump over. So, in a weird way, I'm actually kind of glad that Donald Trump has gotten involved here. Because I do think that he has as a golfer, as somebody who has a relationship with a lot of the golfers on both sides of this debate, and as somebody who stands to profit quite a bit by having the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour working hand in hand, because he can start selling tournaments that include all the golfers at his golf courses, I'm on board with that. Go ahead. Here's the problem. And this is what has been the problem from the beginning. Number one, the Saudis do not care about profit on the LIV Tour. We can say that they do, and you'd like to think that they do, but that's an American mindset. The American mindset is profit above everything. The Saudis don't care about profit. The profit for the Saudis is having people normalizing relationships with Saudi Arabia, having people normalize conversations about Saudi Arabia, and getting away from all the murders and stuff. Let's get away from that. That has always been the goal. You have heard the term sports washing since the beginning of the live. And so for fans to try to accept this separate entity, even if it is trying to make inroads and join in with the PGA Tour, it's one thing to be able to separate people who go to Japan and make very questionable YouTube videos and go, yeah, but he's really good at what he does. That's one thing. It's another thing to go, they've murdered a lot. They've done a lot of the murders. And when they've done a lot of the murders, it's kind of hard to go, but what a fun golf tournament we have going on, right? I mean, I'm willing to brain hole the murders for golf. It's a tough spot. Number two is obviously what the players have to feel about it, because a lot of the guys on the PGA Tour feel very betrayed by the guys who went over to the LIV Tour. The guys who made the PGA Tour suffer in order to get big vaults of money. And now, basically want to come back. They still want to keep all that big pile of money that they got from the Saudis, but also they want all the benefits that the guys on the PGA Tour busted their ass to make sure are still in play without the LIV Tour guys. Adam Scott said over the weekend, he's like, yo, like there's going to be hard feelings. The LIV Tour guys can walk in and be like, hey, no hard feelings, right, guys? Adam Scott's like, yeah, no, there's going to be hard feelings. You ditched us all. You made us shoulder the burden of carrying this tour to go do this other thing. And now that this other thing you're realizing maybe isn't as good as you thought it was going to be, now you want to come back and benefit from the load that we shouldered, from the burden that we carried when you ditched us for a big pile of money. No, it's not okay. And I'm going to keep it a buck with you. Donald Trump, Barack Obama, the greatest leaders in America, I don't know how they can rectify those two positions. I don't know how they can rectify the PGA guys going, you sold us out, now you want back in when we shouldered the burden. And the LIV Tour guys going, yeah, but like, did you see how much they paid us? Because like, it was a lot, man. But now we kind of want to come back because there's also... I don't know how you rectify those two positions. Let's take a break. Back after this, the Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. Thank you, Corey. Real good. Thanks for asking, by the way.
You took an intake of breath. It was too late. I'd already hit the button.
It's all right. We got to...
Still not as bad as Jim Rome's producer, so...
That's not...
That guy was all over him all the time. But maybe there's a volume thing to where... Maybe he didn't even actually hear it. I don't know.
What? The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob, the great one, Lonzo, and you. We had talked not terribly long ago about rookie quarterbacks. We spent some time talking on, I think, last Friday about Trevor Lawrence. We talked about Bryce Young. We've talked about Caleb Williams. We've talked about the incoming rookie quarterbacks, Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, Jackson Dart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And these conversations to me are interesting because of the philosophies of people when discussing and debating these rookie quarterbacks. I have said a number of times that I think the concept of plugging and playing rookie quarterbacks is a lottery. And I think one thing that gets lost to a lot of people, and this is why I am so adamant in my constant repeated insistence that wins and losses are not a quarterback stat. Because I think people have gotten into this mindset that, well, if you got a good quarterback, you win football games. And I certainly will argue that having a great quarterback will help win those football games. But it is not a recipe for just automatically winning football games. And I think that we've got enough data, even just out of the last couple of classes, that we can say that that is true and accurate. We can talk about guys like C.J. Stroud, who was down in Houston. And when C.J. Stroud came out of Houston, or got to Houston, I should say, going into the season, I discussed the fact that I believed that the Houston Texans had created a scenario, a situation, where C.J. Stroud had the best chance to succeed. Not that he would be the most successful, but that he had the best chance to succeed out of any of the guys that came into the NFL in that class. I very much liked his wide receiver setup. They had a good running back. The only question we had was about the head coach, who was also a rook, also a first-time head coach in that spot. And so there were questions about that. But the situation that the Texans put C.J. Stroud in was incredibly beneficial. Then I looked over at Carolina, where Bryce Young comes into play. Now, they didn't have a rookie head coach. They put Frank Reich into that spot. And Frank Reich was a guy that I have to acknowledge. I didn't hate the hire when it happened. I said, all right, this guy's got experience recently with a young quarterback in Andrew Luck. And I put the breakdown of the relationship between Frank Reich and the Indianapolis Colts, I put it on Jim Irsay. Because clearly, Jim Irsay is a guy that was kind of out there, kind of a character, and has had his off-the-field issues to some degree. And I said, I think Irsay might be breaking down a little bit. This might be a Jim Irsay problem, not a Frank Reich problem. Well, turns out it was a Frank Reich problem. Turns out, perhaps, Jim Irsay wasn't the issue. Jim Irsay might have been exactly correct about Frank Reich, because he comes over to Carolina, brings a very antiquated mindset to running the offense around Bryce Young. The antiquated mindset being, I am going to force the quarterback into my system, not mold my system to the quarterback. That is one of the things I've given the Houston Texans a ton of credit for, even with a bit of a fall off this year, a sophomore slump, if you will. The Houston Texans, they went and they got guys like Nico and Tank, and they molded their offense around C.J. Stroud, not tried to force C.J. Stroud's play style into their system. A lot of credit for that. Yesterday, we got into it again. Talked about Caleb Williams a little bit. Because I'm going to tell you, I don't think there's any element of Caleb Williams' game that says to me he can't be that guy. Because I do think he can. And I said going into last year that I thought Caleb Williams, of all the rookies that came into the league last year, had the best setup around him to succeed, except for his head coach. I did not understand the decision to keep Matt Eberflus when Matt Eberflus had proven multiple times that he doesn't get it. They ended up firing him midway through the season, moving on. They went with Thomas Brown, their offensive coordinator, a guy who was right here in Charlotte a couple of years before that. And if you look at the efficiency rating of Caleb Williams before and after the departure of Matt Eberflus, I think you see an uptick. I think you started to see Caleb Williams playing better football. When Frank Reich left, and yes, I know, interim head coach, Bryce Young looked better at the tail end of not this past season, the season before. Bryce Young looked better after his benching at the initial start of this year. Why is that? Because I think it took some time for Dave Canales, a brand new head coach, a first-time head coach, had been an offensive coordinator, but there is a difference between running the offense and running the offense and also the football team. And I think once Dave Canales kind of found his stride, kind of found his rhythm, kind of found his routine a little bit, all of the sudden, after the benching, after Andy Dalton got into the car accident, BY made his way back out onto the field, he looked like a different cat. Trevor Lawrence was in the news about a week ago. The former Clemson Tiger turned Jacksonville Jaguar, the head coach of the Butthole of America Jags. Trevor Lawrence was in the news because there were a number of reports that the Pittsburgh Steelers were looking to make a trade in which they would have acquired Trevor Lawrence. Now, there's no guarantee to that, as Trevor Lawrence has a no-trade clause in his contract. So, that only would have gone down if he wanted it to. And based on his conversation, and we'll hear about this later on with What Up Bay K Adams yesterday, he said, I don't want to go anywhere. I want to be here. I want to win a Super Bowl here. I want to play with my guys. I want to be here. And frankly, I kind of believe him, to be honest with you. A lot of guys say that, and I'm like, I don't know. I kind of believe Trevor Lawrence. I may just be giving him the benefit of the doubt because I've gotten the chance to talk to him and work with him in the past, but I actually believe him. Now, with all of that being said.
You're saying Sunshine wouldn't lie.
I am. I'm not saying he wouldn't lie. I say I don't think he is lying here. To me, the Jags still have not created for Trevor Lawrence what the Panthers created for Bryce Young last year. They still have not created for Trevor Lawrence what I think the Bears have created for Caleb Williams next year by going and getting a young man who's had a ton of success as a play caller and adapting an offense to a quarterback, not the other way around.
All right, I'm confused because only one of the three of those quarterbacks has actually made it to the playoffs and won a playoff game. And that would be Trevor Lawrence.
Correct. And yet, I still don't think.
And has actually had some winning seasons.
Again, poster. Poster.
Inaccurate.
It's not inaccurate. I think that the reason that I continue to say, I was on CBS Sports, well, Infinity Sports Network Radio on Sunday with Sean Levine, big Kansas City guy. We were having the conversation. And he was asking me about the teams I cover. Carolina Panthers, New Orleans Saints, Jacksonville Jaguars because of Trevor, etc. And he said, all right, out of Bryce Young, Caleb Williams, Jacksonville's Trevor Lawrence, which one of those guys do you think ultimately is the best quarterback? And I said, I think all three of them have an element that I would say they are the best at. I think Bryce Young is probably the most accurate of the three passers. And therefore, a guy that if you can prop up a pocket around him, could end up with the most passing yards. I think Trevor Lawrence, to me, Trevor Lawrence is the prototype. Good accuracy down the football field, but his ability to adapt, improvise, move on is there. But you got to build around that, and I don't think they have. And it is a bit frustrating to me. And it has gotten frustrating mainly because not only were the reports floating around that Pittsburgh wanted to make a trade for Trevor Lawrence, but when I saw that report, which I wrote off, when I saw that report and I went looking through like Jags message boards and Reddits and all that, I saw a ton of Jags fans that were like, yeah, let's move on from this guy. This guy can't do it. This guy won't do it. This guy's incapable of doing it. Which I said, I don't think you can know that yet. I don't think you can know that. You've given him some weapons back there. You've given him Etienne, a guy he's comfortable with, he's worked with before. You went and got Brian Thomas out of LSU. Again, number one wide receiver last year, was a rookie. And remember, he was a rookie that played the wide receiver at LSU. Played the number two. I do think if Malik Nabers wasn't on that team with Brian Thomas at LSU, he would have still been a top three draft pick in the NFL. I think he might have been up towards the top of number one. I think that dude is exceptionally talented and was covered up by Malik Nabers because Malik Nabers was a freak show. That's a good pickup. But he was a rookie who played the number two that you plugged in to be number one. I asked this question three shows ago. I'll ask it again. Who was Jacksonville's second best wide receiver last year? Number one was a rookie from LSU. Who was the second best wide receiver there last year? Because I asked Sean Levine that on the radio. It's a guy who covers football. Sean knows ball. I like the guy a lot. I said, Sean Levine, quick, tell me who was the second best wide receiver on that team last year. And he went, I can't come up with it off the top of my head. Yes, exactly. We know who Joey B's are. We know who Lamar's are. We know who Mahomes's are. We know who the good quarterback, second best wide receiver are. You don't know who Jacksonville's is. And I don't put that on Trevor Lawrence's ability to get to number two. In fact, if anything, second-tier quarterbacks, you should know who their number two receiver is because defenses are going to be taking away their number one. You should know who number two is. Jacksonville just hadn't put one there. It's Christian Kirk. Cool. Christian Kirk was a guy that Jacksonville signed 3 years ago, and we thought it was, I thought it was a bad signing at the time. I went, Christian Kirk? That's what you're going to give him to work with? Christian Kirk? And he is still the second best option that they've put on the football field for him. I was blown away, stunned, shocked, surprised, to be honest with you, that there were folks, there were Jacksonville fans. There were Jacksonville fans when the trade rumor started floating around that Pittsburgh wanted to make a move to bring Trevor Lawrence there, that there were Jags fans ready to kick that guy to the curb. Going, has he not won a handful of games? Has he, as Lonzo pointed out, has he not been to a playoff game? Yeah. What are you talking about?
He won a playoff
game. Won a playoff game. Doug Peterson was let go by Philly for a reason. And it's fair if you want to think that the reason Doug Peterson was let go from Philly is garbage. That's fine. I actually accept that. But he was let go for a reason. He comes to Jacksonville because nobody else that was a genuine contender wanted him. There's a reason for that. But we're going to pin it all on the QB? Well, Rob, I mean, he's been there a couple of years. He's a generational guy. He can't do it. My man, I can cook, but if I walk into the kitchen and all you give me is a gallon of spoiled milk and a steak that's been on the counter for 3 days, I can't do anything with that no matter how good I am.
I was going to ask you, out of the three quarterbacks that you mentioned, which one would you take to start a team? But I forgot. That's not a question I need to ask. We all know who it would be.
Trevor Lawrence.
Wow.
Trevor Lawrence.
Not even your little baby boy.
Special baby boy. Not even my beautiful, bouncing, shiny baby boy, Bryce Young. I would take Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is the prototype for an NFL quarterback. If you think I'm not worried about Bryce Young's size, I absolutely am. I've never said I'm not. I've said I think that you lean too much on it as a reason he can't do it. But to say you're not worried about an undersized quarterback would be foolish. I will take the prototype in Jacksonville because I genuinely to this day believe he's been there, what, 3 seasons now? And I do not believe they have given him a chance to win. Christian Kirk. What do you want me to say to that? Texter said Jacksonville needs to get T. Higgins. Just my opinion. I agreed with that. Trev agreed with that. He was on Kay Adams' show last week or Thursday, Friday? And he made the sales pitch for T. Higgins. Problem is, Cincinnati is tagging T. Higgins. He's not available anymore. Jacksonville's got to be active in the wide receiver market. They're probably one of the few teams that I go, you got to draft a guy. Because you got Brian Thomas. But that's the best you're putting on the table for this guy? Him and Christian Kirk? That's not it, man. That's not it. The guy can succeed, but the fans got to relax. Because this will be the first year he's gotten a chance if they get it right. You know who's going to get something right? Lonzo, when he reads his Sports Flash.
At least one, maybe two things. You never know. The Tush Push is on the chopping block as an unidentified team. Tush Push. Reported to be the Green Bay Packers, maybe, possibly, it's probably Green Bay, proposed a rule to ban the play, according to NFL VP of Football Operations, Troy Vincent. Vincent did not identify a team, but if the proposal is accepted for a vote, 24 of 32 teams would have to vote for it to pass during owners' meetings next month. The play has been examined by the NFL in the past, but no action has yet to be taken. Denver Nuggets center Nikola Jokic set a career record with 19 assists in the 125-116 win over Indiana last night, according to ESPN. Denver's win was Jokic's 28th career game with at least 15 assists. Make sure you tune in tomorrow at 6:30 as Furman Paladins take on the Citadel Bulldogs right here on The Fan Upstate.